City Limits is a production of WAER, Syracuse Public Media, and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, National Grid, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016.
At its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
Welcome to City Limits. I'm Chris Bolt. One of the simplest steps to get out of poverty is for a person to get a good or at least stable job. Of course, we know it's not simple. Over the course of our City Limits project, we've brought you stories about the myriad problems people in poverty face getting and keeping employment. We've also covered some of the programs and agencies that assist with transportation when someone doesn't have a car and getting to that solid job is not on a bus line. Workforce development that tries to teach skills that can lead to a job. Programs that help those coming out of prison to get housing to then be able to secure a job instead of the alternative, more crime. The Urban Jobs Task Force in Syracuse works to try and find job opportunities and expand them for residents of the city, especially the poor. And President Deka Dantzel agrees at least one aspect of fighting poverty is pretty straightforward.
We believe that the answer to the issue of poverty is getting people good paying jobs so that they have some sustainable income. They can, you know, maybe break into a better class bracket and that, you know, can trickle down generationally.
But not very many businesses are jumping at the chance to hire people trying to rise out of poverty. Dantzel finds even programs designed specifically to help the poor and often underskilled into jobs don't have a very good record of doing so. We'll have more on that later. So, should businesses play a bigger role? Do they have a responsibility, if they're doing pretty well, to help the city with its poverty problem, a rate almost three times the national average? Say they don't really sell anything to people in poor communities, or they don't have any offices in such areas, or they only have positions that require a specific degree or experience. Maybe it's not their problem. Well, Mel Menon of Darko Manufacturing has worked on this issue, and she finds that kind of thinking short-sighted.
I think that, you know, if there are businesses that don't believe that they're necessarily affected by poverty, then they're mistaken. And so I think that, you know, we all ought to acknowledge our complicity in the problems of poverty and also our ability to be proactive in being part of the solution.
Both Menon and Dantzel agree that poverty affects everyone in higher crime rates, fewer resources for the city and county to pave a street or improve schools, more tax dollars needed for social services. You might be thinking, well, there are job training programs. Businesses do take part. Elected leaders talk about job development all the time that should create more jobs for even the poor. But even though unemployment is below 4%, those who need the jobs the most aren't getting them.
Sometimes, Chris, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I really feel like people notice, but they don't want people to do better then. Because how could you? How do you keep doing the same types of programs and not having outcomes? And how
Dantzel questions the effectiveness and wisdom of perhaps stale or at least uncreative programs that are supposed to help.
While the numbers of poverty are growing larger in Syracuse, I don't understand it. And all these issues, I hate when people say, well, you know, people are always want to advocate for jobs, but we don't even have that skilled workforce. We don't even have that qualified workforce. First of all, I'm going to stop you right there because we could have that workforce.
On this episode of City Limits, we're going to examine businesses' role in reducing poverty while looking inside some of the policies that might just create a more effective connection between opportunity and those that need it most. What might it look like if a business really wanted to put a dent in poverty? Maybe that comes from a desire to elevate the whole region in some small part, or to provide opportunity to the disadvantaged, perhaps paying back a helping hand they received in the past. Bottom line, somebody needs to go back to work and get a paycheck who hasn't been getting one in the past. In my discussion about businesses doing a better job making an impact, two things came up. First, the disconnect between the people who need jobs and the specific jobs that are available. Second, how job training does not effectively lead to a paying position, despite in some cases promises of doing just that. Some of the people here on the production floor at Darko Manufacturing were brought in without any specific skills. For businesses that have open positions, Mel Menon finds there's a lot of reluctance.
I think there may be a reluctance to try to talk about poverty because, you know, I mean, for one, poverty is something that's hard to get a handle on. It's overwhelming. So when you're a business or an employer, I think that, you know, one place you can start is with your workforce, right? And that's kind of an obvious thing because it's people, right? And every workforce is going to have some kind of spread where you've got entry level.
That's really limiting in, say, a high-tech business and can even mean a company that needs workers misses out on someone who might have other attributes such as their interest or enthusiasm or need for the job.
We get caught up on the constraints. We get caught up on the word poverty or the word entry level or the word, you know, opportunity youth or opportunity individual, or we get kind of caught up by these terms that I think scare employers away from just looking at individuals and also just looking at work opportunities. So, you know, if you're an employer and somebody says, well, this poverty program wants to try to place people, you know, at your site, you know, if you're an employer, then, you know, you're very quickly going to say, okay, well, where's the least risky place to do that? Well, entry-level position.
That's if an employer even has or wants to create anything entry-level. Menon points out most workplaces train anyway, and requiring certain degrees, certificates, or levels of experience can work against both the job seeker and the employer who needs help. The second part of this disconnect is the job training programs that don't meet the needs. In past episodes of City Limits, we told you about culinary and healthcare programs that did directly lead to jobs after teaching specific skills to people without much in the way of job experience. The Urban Jobs Task Force tries to get programs like these and employers more directly connected. But Deka Dantzel says in looking into the programs, often funded by public money, there's something missing.
And what we found, you know, when we asked people, well, you know, let's say, I won't say these agencies' names, but let's say you have an agency that starts out with 285 people into this class, and 29 of them graduate. That's 10%. I have to ask that person, what is the problem? Where is the disconnect? How is this the outcome?
If we're really talking about helping people out of poverty, some flexibility is needed or they just won't get results.
If this is a unpaid training and you're living in poverty now, you may not be able to afford to do that. You know, let's say you're having on-the-job training, construction work starts at 6:30, you have to get your child to school at 8 o'clock, you have nobody to help you do that, you're out. You can't do this. These hours are not feasible. If this training program is Monday through Friday from, let's say, 7 to 3, and again, you have to give your child to school at 8 o'clock and you have nobody to help you, and you can only miss, let's say you can only miss 2 days before you're kicked out of the class, and, you know, your bus just comes late, guess what? Too bad, you're kicked out of the class.
The irony here, she hears from employers all the time that say they can't find a trained workforce they need, even as programs are there to provide that training. Perhaps businesses can play a little more active role in helping the Syracuse area crawl out from under crushing poverty that many believe drags everyone down. For Mel Menon, it should be a duty with an approach a little different from the past.
If you want to be a community responsible entity, then, you know, some piece of this may be that you can provide work opportunities. And let's then say, well, if you're going to provide work opportunities, let's really look at the requirements for work. You know, let's look at that again, because as you've been asked in the past, or as you've developed your HR tools or, you know, your job descriptions, perhaps we can look and see if there can be some flexibility around some of the requirements.
She says Darko goes into high schools to educate about what work is like on their manufacturing floor and has students into the workplace. She says the model could be replicated, if that looks like an internship or just a visit, to demystify the workplace for young people.
But for the ones that are at least getting a sense of what it looks like, smells like, you know, appears to be like to work in this industry or any other industry, you know, that's something that maybe you start to develop a little bit of a conceptual hook. Maybe later on when they're older, they'll hang their hat on that hook.
Public schools are increasing CTE, career and technical education, to teach job readiness to students who might not be destined for college. That could pay dividends in the future, but is not helping adults now living in poverty. What is going on now in our area is a lot of development. And every time a business seeks some kind of tax break or incentive to build, relocate, or expand, maybe there's a chance to also have an impact on poverty. The Urban Jobs Task Force goes to those economic development meetings where these deals are being worked out.
So I would like to see our industrial development agency write in some type of policy, write in some type of law where any new development project is going to guarantee a benefit to the community. It doesn't always have to be jobs, but if it's not jobs, it should be training. And training that is, again, I have to say it all the time, that is a true effective pipeline. And the reason why is because we do have so much training that does not translate into jobs.
Deka Dantzel mentions community benefit agreements, which simply mean if a company, maybe a developer, wants some measure of tax break, city or county accommodation for their project, the community benefits. And what better benefit than putting a dent in poverty and helping people and families rise up a little? Most of us, when we travel on or under I-81 here in downtown Syracuse, wonder about the future. Will this overpass come down? What might replace it? Well, Dantzel and others see a huge opportunity. They wonder how many jobs might be created for people who need them most and what tremendous impact that might have on the city as well.
This is a major opportunity. It's going to be over $1 billion. It's going to be hundreds of jobs, hundreds of high-paying jobs, decent-paying jobs. But what needs to be done so that people can be ready for that opportunity is that there's a lot of entities in the community that need to join forces now, right now, to get that workforce ready. No one agency, no one group is going to be the one that does it. We're going to need participation from local government. We're going to need participation from our labor unions. We're going to need participation from workforce development agencies and other human service agencies.
In last year's State of the City address, Mayor Ben Walsh proposed Syracuse Build precisely to prepare workers and local contractors to get some of the work that will eventually go into the I-81 viaduct replacement. Dantzel says the money's going to get spent and can mean that huge investment could have multiple benefits.
The Urban Jobs Task Force is hoping that that's what Syracuse Build is going to be. And I will say that I commend them for thinking about that and, you know, trying to get people prepared and tying it into poverty and understanding the importance of this project for us. So I would say that that's one thing that is hopeful. There's actually been, you know, I've seen some city staff dedicated to working on it, and they've been meeting with us, which is also a great sign. So I'll just say I'm hopeful.
Mel Menon with Darko Manufacturing is also hopeful that more attention is leading to more opportunities. She wonders if framing the issue slightly differently might help encourage more businesses to come to the table, especially as Syracuse enjoys a little better economy and vibrancy.
Scare tactic. You know, you use the word poverty, you drop the poverty bomb, and everyone runs, right? Because it is such an unwieldy thing. So if we sort of we know that this is an issue, right? So let's say we took that one off the table for just a minute, and we were actually just talking to everybody about what makes for a prosperous community. You know, if we use the term prosperity versus poverty when we have these conversations, I think that we actually would get a lot farther.
Both Menon and Dantzel agree businesses could do more to help relieve Syracuse's poverty. And many local leaders might not realize how much the city's poverty brings everyone down in higher crime rates, more resources needed for social services and police, and just in a lack of hope for many residents that could be contributing to the community. We already know what happens if measures aren't taken at the business or public policy level. For City Limits, I'm Chris Bolt.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Find more from this series at citylimitsproject.org and subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes.